This is Jim Inkster. Coming next on the show, we are slated to hear from former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, also the former mayor of the Fighting City of Philadelphia and former chair of the Democratic National Committee. He's coming to Louisiana to speak to Democrats in New Orleans in a few days, and he'll talk with us about the state of affairs for his party and the national scene as the Democratic Party tries to retain control of the U.S. Senate. Also on the show, we are scheduled to hear from the Capitol Watcher and prominent blogger C.B. Forgotston on what's going on regarding Common Core and the controversy over Colonel Mike Edmondson, and Mukul Verma from the Baton Rouge Area Foundation on the annual City Stats report, revealing some interesting nuggets about the quality of life in our community. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. And we're joined at the start of our show by the former governor of the great state of Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell, former mayor of Philadelphia, former DA of the City of Brotherly Love, and also Ed Rendell led the Democratic National Committee. That is why he is coming to New Orleans in a few days. He will be speaking to the Democratic Party and others at the annual Jefferson Jackson Dinner, which will be held August 9th at the Hyatt Regency in the Crescent City. 297-5633, your number for the Honorable Ed Rendell. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, Jim. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Well, you're joining us from the Fighting City of Philadelphia. Are the Phillies going to trade Cole Hamels?
No, they won't trade Cole Hamels. He's an asset that we can build on because he's still young and extraordinarily effective. And they won't trade Chase Utley because he's the face of the franchise. But after that, anybody's for sale.
So Jimmy Rollins, Brian Howard, Cliff Lee, they could all go if somebody wants them at the right price.
Jonathan Papelbon, yeah, they could all go. I don't think they're going to give them away because the franchise is in good shape. We're not going to dump salaries. But if we get some prospects, I think virtually any of those players you name could go.
Well, we'll get to the politics, but your affinity for sports, I think, probably helped you in your political endeavors in Pennsylvania.
There's no question. Since my last, year as mayor in 1998, I've done a post-game Eagles show myself, a sports writer, and a former Eagles player on TV. And it broadcasts through half of the state, all the way the east, west to Harrisburg. And it was a very important vehicle helping me run. I remember once I was in Wilkes-Barre campaigning, and an older couple came out of a hot dog stop, and she said, the wife said to me, "You're that mayor, aren't you, running for governor?" I said, "Yep." And she pointed to her husband and said, "He's voting for you. He thinks you're a good mayor, but he's really voting for you because he likes the football show." And, of course, she was implying that she wasn't voting for me. But
yeah.
No, it's been a help. Anything that humanizes politicians helps, but you can't be a phony. So when I was governor, I was asked, when the Steelers and Eagles were in their respective conference finals, who would I root for if the Steelers played the Eagles and Steelers played the Eagles in the Super Bowl? And I said, "Look, I'm going to root for the Eagles. I've been an Eagles season ticket holder for 30 years. I'd be a bum if just for politics I said that I was neutral." And the real fans in Pittsburgh appreciated that, but not everybody did.
Well, you are in love with your city, and for those who have never been to Philadelphia, at one time it was not a well-regarded city, but thanks to the work of people like Mayor and then Governor Rendell, that all changed. And there are people like Tim McCarver, for example, who's traveled the world playing baseball, who says there's no city like Philadelphia. What's so special about your city?
Well, it's interesting. It, of course, has tremendous history. Virtually everything important about the founding of our country happened in Philadelphia. Tremendous history and heritage, and we take that seriously. But it also has a terrific population that's gritty and to a great extent blue-collar, although we now have eds and meds, and we're very high-tech also. But the people in Philadelphia appreciate hard work, and they appreciate people who are real. And they're down to earth, and, you know, we got a reputation for booing our own athletes, but we only boo when we don't think they're trying. When they're trying, regardless of the outcomes, we stick with them. But we want people to roll up their sleeves and work hard, and that makes us a city, not unique in America, but it makes us a city that is a very special place. And we've done the transformation from industrial to high-tech to eds and meds, and we've done it successfully. We're a great destination city, as is New Orleans. So we're a city on the move. We've grown in population, which is not the case for all American cities. We've brought young people back to the city. Now there's not a young person who wants to live in the suburbs. They all want to live downtown. We're bringing empty nesters back. So the city's moving. It still has its challenges, education being the foremost challenge. But the city's on the right track, and it's got great people. And we generally like New Orleans, although you broke our heart last January when you beat us in that playoff game.
Well, you are one of the voices of the Eagles, and you got me on this sports kick. I grew up, believe it or not, I'm old enough to remember when Harry Callis was part of the Houston Astros broadcast team.
Sure, before he came to Philadelphia and became a legend.
And you were very close to him, one of the great baseball announcers of all time. But in some ways, people knew his voice, but largely unknown as far as his face outside of Philadelphia.
Right, he did the voice for the NFL films for a long time, and people did know his voice, but in Philadelphia, he became beloved. And again, not just because he was a great and funny sports announcer, but because he did so much for the community and was really a caring guy. I mean, when the Phillies won the World Series, Harry announced it with a flourish and then broke down in tears. And that's the type of attachment that Philadelphians have with their sports team.
We've got
a statue of Harry in our new stadium.
There you go. 297-5633 for Ed Rendell, former governor of Pennsylvania. He was governor from 2003 to 2011. Did you ever run into Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, when you were on the job as the leader of your state?
Just briefly. I mean, we overlapped a little bit, and occasionally at National Governors Association meetings, we would run into each other. I've had a long-term relationship with Senator Landrieu and with Mayor Landrieu, but not so much with Governor Jindal. I'll tell you a quick Mayor Landrieu story. I'm sitting at home Monday night after Katrina hit, and I'm watching TV like everybody else, and I'm just stunned by what's happened. And I get a call from Haley Barbour and Mary Landrieu asking me to send National Guard troops down to the Gulf to Louisiana and Mississippi because their guard was stretched out so much. And the next morning, I sent 2,100 Pennsylvania Guardsmen down. And interestingly, I got tons of letters from Louisianans and Mississippians thanking me. But I also got tons of letters from our Guardsmen who said it was the best experience in their life trying to help Americans get back on their feet.
Well, Louisiana is a state that, like Pennsylvania, has been rightly or wrongly noted for political chicanery. I'm sure you bristle when people say that about your state, because there's certainly a lot of good things, and most people are good in both states, but nonetheless, that is the backdrop, probably created the environment for somebody like Bobby Jindal to be elected, and he ran as a shining knight, and he, of course, has stayed out of the courtrooms. But as far as the trending in the states, Louisiana has gone from solidly blue to solidly red. Pennsylvania is still a swing state. Why is that the case?
Well, interestingly, your point is well taken about Pennsylvania and corruption, although I was very proud. One of the things I'm proudest of is in my 8 years as governor, no one from my administration was charged with any crime or fiscal wrongdoing or anything in that area at all, something I pride myself in. Although I have a picture on my wall from my first year with legislative leaders, and there were eight in the picture with me, and six of the eight wound up in prison. That's not a very great testament. But we're a swing state because we've got democratic traditions in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, two of our biggest cities. and that has kept us competitive. When Pennsylvania does go blue, as it has in presidential elections since Mike Dukakis lost the state, ever since then it's gone blue. It did for my two elections. It's because the turnout is exceptional in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and in the Philadelphia suburbs, which are huge, have more population than almost twice as many people as the city does now, the Republican voters, a lot of them have become Democrats or become independent because their party has left them. Their party has become so radical, particularly on social issues, that those formerly Republican voters either become Democrats or are voting Democrat. And that's been the reason that we're competitive in Pennsylvania. Otherwise, it would be a Republican state.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Governor Rendell of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Governor, I know that Richie Ashburn and Robin Roberts recently passed away. Are any of the old 50s whiz kids still with us?
Well, very few. The whiz kids won in 1950, and they were all young. Very few are still left. Puddin'head Jones is gone. Granny Hamner, Wakis, they're pretty much all gone. I don't know about Jim Constanti, but there's no one who's active and visible in the city itself right now.
Well, Robin Roberts, whose name was synonymous with sports long before the anchor on ABC, he won 20 games 6 times in a row, and then won 19 games in 1956, just missing a 7th straight 20-win season. Who's the greatest Philly of them all, Ed Rendell?
Well, let me say one thing about Robin. In those 7 years, your listeners will find this to be shocking. He averaged 27 complete games a year. I'm not sure there are 27 complete games in the entire National League in a year.
You're
27
correct.
Complete games a year he averaged. The greatest Philly of all time, I think it's hard to match Robin Roberts' achievements. What he did is extraordinary. His durability was extraordinary. Never missed a start. The greatest pitcher in terms of productivity in his era. Richie Ashburn, probably if you polled today, would be considered one of the greatest Phillies. He was a great player, but Richie benefited by becoming an announcer, joining with Harry Callis for decades and decades and decades. So Philadelphia fans have a relationship with him for two reasons. But I would say the greatest Philly pitcher was Robin Roberts, and probably the greatest offensive talent we ever had was Mike Schmidt or Dick Allen.
Well, Allen's reign didn't last as long as Schmidt's, and Schmidt, of course, was a brilliant third baseman as well, 10 gold gloves, 548 home runs, and eight times Mike Schmidt led the National League in home runs. Barry Bonds, who probably is the greatest player in my lifetime, he only led the National League in home runs twice, but Schmidt, who played in a dead ball era, was the dominant player in the game during the era between Mays and Bonds. I would take number 20 as the greatest Philly of them all.
Well, amazingly, in addition to all what you said about Mike Schmidt, he was a great fielder. He was a Gold Glove third baseman, too.
He was, and we have a listener, Steve, who says, what about Steve Carlton? I would take him, and even though Robin Roberts is great, but Carlton won 4 Cy Young Awards.
Hello.
And he also won 27 games in 1972 on a team that only won 59. Nicholas on Nicholson says, I'm an ex-Philadelphian and love the city. I always get a kick from W.C. Fields, who said I'd rather spend 3 nights in a cemetery than a night in Philadelphia. It certainly does not apply to me, writes Nicholas on Nicholson. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Ed Rendell, as mentioned, will be in New Orleans a week from Saturday at the annual Jefferson Jackson dinner from the Democratic Party in Louisiana, and he is a good friend of Senator Mary Loretta Landrieu Snelling's, fighting for re-election against the challenges of Bill Cassidy and Rob Manus. Rob Manus, by the way, yesterday picked up the endorsement of Tony Perkins. The hard right conservatives are not really that enthused about Congressman Cassidy, the former Dukakis Democrat. We'll talk more when we return after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with the 45th governor of Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell. He led his state from 2003 to 2011. Also was mayor of Philadelphia from 1992 to 2000. Former DA in Philadelphia as well. And he is a man who loves the great city of Philadelphia. Born in New York City, though. When did you wind up in Philadelphia, Governor Rendell?
I was a freshman at the University of Pennsylvania. I'd never been in Philadelphia before, and essentially I never left.
Freshman at the University of Pennsylvania. They still play at the Palestra, don't they?
Yeah, Palestra, the oldest continuous college basketball arena in the country.
And I know you're a big Penn fan as well. And,
no question.
A great school. Also the alma mater of Donald Trump. Did you go to school with him?
I was a couple of years ahead of Donald, but better than even Donald. His two kids were terrific. Ivanka and Donnie went to Penn as well.
A listener asks about your service in the U.S. Army. You served during the Vietnam era. You served. Many, of course, of your vintage did not. That used to be a big issue in American politics. Why is it not any longer?
Not so much anymore. I think the fallout over the wars, I mean, the wars, we certainly appreciate our fighting men and women who risk their lives for us, but the wars that we've been engaged in since Vietnam are really, except for the first invasion of Iraq when we were doing it for Kuwait, freeing the Kuwaitis, have not been popular wars. And so I think that people are not so focused on whether you served in the military. I was in a unit that was a military government unit called Civil Affairs, and my unit went into Haiti after I left it, went into Haiti when President Clinton sent us in to help the RSD government come back into power. And my unit's been sent to Iraq twice. And as governor, I had the great experience of attending a send-off ceremony for my own unit to go to Iraq, and that's a very solemn occasion, but it was terrific to do that for my own unit.
Why is there so much hate in American politics today?
Well, I think it's the fault of, and I'm not a person who bashes the media. I've had a pretty good relationship with the media, and I believe the media is the vehicle that politicians must use to get their ideas across to the people. But I think the 24/7 constant news cycle promotes this a lot. You've got stations, and one of them I work for, that are partisan to a great degree, MSNBC, Fox, etc. And you've got people out there who, for ratings, stir up these passions. You have politicians who, to try to get votes with the base of the party, the extreme left in our party, the extreme right in the Republican Party, stir up that hate as a way of currying favor with voters. And sometimes voters are short-sighted, and I'll give you a perfect example, Jim. The recent flap on the border with these children coming in. There is an incredible amount of hate that's been stirred up directed at these kids. When these kids go on buses to American cities to be held temporarily while they have their hearings, the people who come out and yell vile things at these children. These children are there only because their parents were desperate to get them away from horribly difficult situations in their home country. Now, that doesn't mean that we should take them all. It doesn't mean that we've got to, you know, take everybody's problems. But certainly, those children shouldn't be the recipients of hate and vile. And we've got to take a deep breath in this country and understand that we can disagree about positions, but that doesn't mean that people are evil. I mean, Rick Santorum and I, the former senator from Pennsylvania who ran for president, he and I are as politically far apart as anybody, and yet we're good friends and we talk about issues. And when he was a senator, he and I was governor, we worked on issues that were important to Pennsylvanians, and we disagreed when we disagreed, but we worked effectively together. We've got to get back to that, or this nation is screwed.
Greg Freeman, LSU professor, he says, now going to Oklahoma State, though, he says, as a Philly native, I would love to hear my old mayor's thoughts on the school crisis in America, especially Philly, and the possible solutions.
Well, you know, I'm happy to do that because I think during my 8 years as governor, Pennsylvania went from being in the bottom third in the national test to being fourth. Our eighth graders in 2010 had the highest reading scores in the country, and it happened because we invested resources in education. Now, I'm not one for giving school districts a blank check, but there are certain things, Jim, that we know work, like quality pre-kindergarten education, full-day kindergarten, smaller class sizes, teacher training, technology in the classroom, and all of those things cost money, and we've got to invest in them so that our kids get the opportunity to reach their full potential. I spent a lot of money and raised taxes in my first term improving our educational system. I had an opponent when I ran for re-election who spent $16 billion reminding people that I raised taxes, and I won by 21 percentage points because people could see the difference in their kids' education. And education is the key to the economic viability of this country. You show me how good our school systems are across the country 20 years from now, and I'll show you if America is still the number one dominant economy in the world.
Final call for Governor Rendell on WRKF this morning. Donald on Essen. Donald, good morning. You're on the air.
Morning, Governor. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, my question is, in Louisiana, we have a situation right now between the governor, the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education, parents, and the union. Lawsuits have been filed from one corner of the state to the next. A governor was for Common Core, full force for several years, and all of a sudden, for some reason, when the people in Washington were promoting it, all of a sudden they don't want it, and they turned it into a political issue. And the basis is that we're there trying to federalize education. And when school starts in 5 weeks, the teachers, superintendents, they're losing their hair. The parents are stuck in the middle. How do you think we can address that in this state, and how will that affect Governor Jindal's attempt to run for president?
Well, that's a very good example. It's a very good question. Common Core was a group of standards that didn't come from the federal government, guys. It came from the National Governors Association, and it was sponsored by Governor Jeb Bush of Florida. He said that we've got to have a Common Core graduation standard that stretches our kids, that makes them learn better and makes them more effective in either seeking jobs or going on to higher education. And it's got to be a rigorous standard. So Jeb Bush went around and he asked governors from around the country to sign on. And 45 out of the 50 governors signed on to Common Core, Republicans and Democrats alike. And then someone on TV, I think it was Glenn Beck, but someone from the Republican right started saying, well, the federal government shouldn't impose standards on the states. And in fact, the Obama administration did adopt the Common Core standards, but it was Jeb Bush who really put them through and got the states to adopt them in the first place. They're good standards. We've got to have a higher level of education. So many of our kids in Louisiana schools, Pennsylvania schools, Illinois schools, so many of our kids graduate from high school, get a diploma, and can't do college work. They need remediation to do freshman work in college. So many of our kids can't do the necessary things as high school graduates, the basic work skills that don't require a college education, but their basic skills aren't high enough for them to succeed in the workplace. We've got to change that, and we've got to change it by raising our standards. People have to understand that a diploma doesn't mean anything if the kid receiving that diploma doesn't get a quality education. So I think Governor Jindal has just gone with the political winds. The far right now is against Common Core because they say it's a federal government issue, that the federal government's trying to impose standards on the states and localities. That's not the case. Look it up, Governor Jindal. It was one of your Republican governors, Jeb Bush, who put Common Core together.
All right, we'll let you go. But for those who are hearing you extol the virtues of the city of brotherly love, if we come to Philadelphia, what's the one place we must see?
Well, Independence National Historic Park. You've got the Liberty Bell there, you've got Independence Hall, and you've got the Constitution Center. No American who says he or she loves this country should live without seeing those three important buildings that were so crucial to the development of our country.
And if you go to one restaurant in a city that's known for restaurants about like New Orleans is, where do you go?
Well, I'd go to Pat's Cheesesteak, which doesn't have any seats. You have to eat standing up. But Philadelphia has great gourmet restaurants. But the one thing we have that no other city has is real cheesesteaks. And you shouldn't eat more than one for your heart, one a day. But if you come to Philadelphia and don't eat a cheesesteak, you're missing out.
Well, thank you, Governor Rendell. Hope you have a good trip to New Orleans.
Thanks, Tim.
Good to visit with you. Take care.
Look forward to coming to New Orleans. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're joined now by C.B. Forgotston, who lived in New Orleans until Katrina came calling, almost 9 years ago, if you can believe that. And now C.B. is sheltered in the lovely hamlet of Hammond. Good morning, Capital Watcher and blogger C.B. Forgotston of Forgotston.com. How are you, Mr. C.B. Forgotston?
I'm doing great, Jim. Appreciate you having me on again. And it is hard to believe that it's been 9 years since Katrina hit. At one time, I thought it would never, the time would never go by.
Well, I remember being on the air with you during Katrina. You were not a happy camper.
No, whatever the stages of getting over things, I immediately jumped. About 10 of them went straight to anger.
Some say you haven't gotten out of that that realm, CB.
Well, that's only those who have never really seen me angry. I'm very calm and collected now.
Well, we're going to get to...
I am passionate, though.
There's no doubt about that, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that, even those who disagree with you. But before we get to Mike Edmondson, we just heard from former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, and he says that Governor Jindal has pointed the wrong finger at Common Core, that it's not President Obama's idea, it was Jeb Bush's idea. What's going on with the governor's change of heart here?
Well, I think Governor Rendell explained it perfectly. I was listening, and when he said that Glenn Beck came out and decided to point the finger at the federal government, that's what Bobby Jindal decided that he was no longer for it. I mean, that's all it took. Despite the fact I'm aware that this was a kind of a Republican initiative initially, and you know, but what happens with a lot of politicians, but especially Bobby Jindal, whenever he believes or perceives that his base is not supportive of whatever stand he takes, he switches stands, which is good because Bobby Jindal is a perfect politician. He has no core values.
No core values and no common core.
You know it, but Jim, if the National Republican Governors Conference or Sean Hannity come out and support Common Core, Bobby Jindal will be for it. So he's squarely on both sides of the issue. You can't lose.
Well, politicians, as Jerry Brown once said, by nature are victims, or and they engage in hypocrisy. It's just a matter of degree. It's part of the process of getting elected, and the governor wants to be president. So can you blame him?
No, that's what politicians do. That's the reason people ask me, well, why hadn't you run for something? I said, I can't bring myself to be a hypocrite.
All right, 297-5633 for CB Forgotston and Inkster Show at WRKF.org. What do you think is going to happen? There are lawsuits now on both sides. You're a good lawyer, CB Forgotston. Who has the upper hand when the courts come calling?
Well, Jim, I really haven't been able to figure out exactly what each is suing for. The perfect solution for me would be for both factions of the general followers to lose. And that's what you have. You have one faction of general followers suing another faction of general followers. And so the perfect solution would be for them all to lose. And that could happen because I don't know that they have standing to do some of the challenges that they do are doing.
Yesterday, the Bessie board, it was not a slam dunk. The vote was 6-4 to proceed with a lawsuit against the governor. And the two of Jindal's own appointees, two of his three appointees, sided with the majority in this case. Without them, it would not have passed. That was an interesting development.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We need to start requiring these people in the Jindal following to start wearing jerseys so we know which side they're on each time, because it's hard to tell. And, you know, you say suing the governor, and yes, I understand that's how that's what I read in the headlines and the media reports, but again, I didn't look at the suit. But, you know, that's one of the things I disagreed with Bessie over, and I was asked by somebody who is close to him for my legal opinion about them having the ability to sue the governor, and I'm saying that just doesn't fit with me. I mean, how does the finance department of a corporation sue the CEO? That's just not done. And Bobby Jindal is the CEO of the state, whether we like him or not, and the Department of Education and Bessie are under him. So it doesn't fit in with my basic understanding of civics or government.
So you're sounding like the governor may have the edge when it comes to who has jurisdiction here. Interestingly, Bessie has hired Phil Price as its attorney, another great man from Newellton, Louisiana, the home of our guest C.B. Fregatzdin. Is there some kind of Newellton cabal involved in this, C.B.?
Yeah, there's no doubt that all great things come from Newellton or have a tensile base. But no, sir, they didn't actually hire him. Phil, I understand it, as doing this pro bono. But pro bono... I don't know that they have gotten the authority from the Division of Administration or Governor Jindal to actually sue. I mean, I hadn't followed this closely. If something has changed, you please correct me. But even pro bono counsel must be approved by the governor. That's a state law.
Well, I don't think the governor is going to approve a lawsuit against himself.
I don't either, and that's exactly what I told these people when they first contacted me. I said, do you really think as a political, practical matter that the governor is going to authorize, certainly not a good attorney like Phil Price, to sue him?
Well, I tell you what.
He might authorize him to hire Jimmy Faircloth.
Well, that's just it. I know Phil Price pretty well. He was my attorney at one point on a business matter, and he's very good. He ran for governor and finished fifth in 1995. And I would say if it's Price versus Faircloth, that's like a major leaguer going against a double-A guy.
you're giving Faircloth, I would say, a sub-A.
Well, Jimmy Faircloth, who's a nice man, and he just doesn't have a real good track record representing the governor.
Well, I'm not. Your experience with him is different from mine. I don't even think he's a nice guy. I mean, he is most rude, obnoxious, arrogant individual.
Well, you know, some people have said the same thing about us.
Well, but they're wrong about us, Jim.
297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. Inkstershow@wrkf.org. We'll hear from Mukul Verma about another major survey involving our community, and also we'll get CB's take on the Mike Edmondson's controversy when we return after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with CB Fregatzdin, the Capitol Watcher, and you can read more about his thoughts about the world at large and our world in particular at Fregatzdin.com. Steve Winham, the former budget director, writes, Jim, I hope you will allow CB the opportunity to provide a counterpoint to Colonel Edmondson's interview with you. What do you think, CB? He said on this show, by the way, the colonel did, that he was a bit disappointed that you had not called him before you called him out. What's going on, CB Fregatzdin, with you and the colonel?
Well, first of all, when I began my commentary, I didn't say anything about Mike Edmondson, so there was nothing to contact him about. I was blasting the legislature and pointing out the unconstitutional nature of the benefit that they had approved for Mike Edmondson. I never said that anything about Mike Edmondson. Now, I'm a little concerned about why he felt the need to bring my name to the fore, but That's his decision, and that's the reason I hadn't reacted to it until you said this. I mean, I've got nothing to hide.
You're pointing a finger at Neil Reiser. Was he the catalyst for this?
Neil Reiser was the catalyst. Colonel Edmondson on your show said that some of his staff people brought the bill or the amendment to Reiser. Reiser's the one that lied about not putting in the amendment. Then he lied that his staff misled him. And he continues to lie to this day and, you know, has lied to his own colleagues, so not to mention the public. So, yes, he's part of the problem, but the problem now is that nobody will do anything about it.
All right.
The
board
that has the responsibility won't.
If Senator Reiser or Jimmy Faircloth, if they want to appear on this show, there's an open door because we both said things about them that if they wish to respond, I think they should be given the opportunity. Mike Edmondson's retirement's based on the fact that he's earning much more as colonel than he did as a captain, about $55,000 more a year. And this last-minute bill that got no hearing involved him and one other trooper, and it would increase Colonel Edmondson's retirement to about $55,000 more per year than he receives right now if things stay the same. Now, he has said, look, I'm not going to take this under these circumstances. We'll address it next year. Is that good enough for you?
It's not good enough for the law. The law doesn't allow Edmondson to merely not take it. That's one of the legal questions that I've raised in which the board has refused to resolve. But The problem is there are several problems from a legal and a practical standpoint. Mike Edmondson can't speak for the other people who are affected by that amendment. And we don't even know how many that is. We know it's at least one more. But Mike Edmondson cannot speak for the other trooper to say he can't collect it. There's a serious legal question of whether he can reject it. And so based on my reading of the law and everybody else, the only way to resolve the problem is to declare Senate Bill 294 unconstitutional and thus wipe it off the books.
All right.
So there's no easy solution to this mess. It's a joint creation of Neil Reiser and his colleagues in the legislature.
Well, it will be interesting to see how it is handled now that Colonel Edmondson says he's not taking the money. Henry Johnson says, don't you and CB realize the goal isn't necessarily winning in court? The goal is winning with the highest number of billable hours. After all, talk about corporate welfare. The lawyer that you reference will fight loser cases at the governor's behest all up and down the court system till hell freezes over or his gravy train stops. Is that fair?
Henry's opinion. People say that about all lawyers. My desire is to win. Some just choose to bill hours. I can't say. I don't know enough about what's going on internally. In fact, there's not even a lawsuit's been filed on this issue yet, which is starting to disturb me, whether it drags on or not. First, a lawsuit's got to be initiated. And that hasn't even been done
I think Henry was probably referring to the Common Core lawsuit.
But
Stephen Dixon says, wasn't it interesting that former Governor Rendell pronounced Jindal's name Jindal? It makes one wonder how seriously Jindal is taken in other parts of the country. Now, by the way, we had the head of the Arkansas Democratic Party, Vince Insulaco, on this show a few weeks ago, and he says he wasn't doing it intentionally, but three times he called Governor Jindal Governor Jingle. So Bobby Jindal, according to polls, he's at 4% right now as he seeks the presidency in 2 years. Can he catch fire, CB, for Gotston?
Absolutely not. I mean, it's a joke. I was surprised that people even took the last time when he was being considered for vice president. In fact, I was getting contacts from media from all over the country because of my website, which lists the things the hypocrisies of Bobby Jindal. And I kept telling the reporters that were calling me from Washington and elsewhere, you know, cool it, guys. Bobby Jindal's not going to be selected as vice president. I mean, 4% of the people in the country, and really it's probably more like 4% of the Republicans, support Bobby Jindal. That's a joke. I am just amazed mm-hmm. that the media continues to help perpetrate Bobby Jindal. It says something about his PR team's ability to lobby the national media.
Well, presidents, by the way, generally don't come from cities as large as Baton Rouge, and that's the governor's hometown. They come from places like Eureka, Illinois, and Plains, Georgia, and Hope, Arkansas, and Yorba Linda, California, and Newellton, Louisiana.
Well, I didn't realize that, Jim. That's very interesting. But Bobby Jindal, it wouldn't make any difference if he came from Newellton. He wouldn't go anywhere because of who he is. He's a hypocrite. We just explained that at the beginning of my interview.
Well, I don't think he'd be the first. If he is a hypocrite, he wouldn't be the first to be elected president of the United States.
But Jim, hypocrites, the politicians try not to contradict themselves in the same day. That's their goal. Bobby does.
Okay, well, I'm glad, CB, that you have taken your nice pills, because I wouldn't want to be around you if you were really mad.
Oh, absolutely. My wife insisted I take a double dose this morning before I got on your show.
Okay.
I'm cool.
Well, let's talk again. Thank you, CB,
all right,
for
Godspeed.
Take care. We're joined now by Mukul Verma, the Director of Communications for the Baton Rouge Area Foundation. Good morning, Mukul. Great journalist in his own right for many years, and now is the man who is presenting information regarding BRAF, which is a big part of our community. And you, of course, want to know what's happening with the citizenry as far as the thoughts. And how many years have you done this City Stats survey?
We've done this for 6 years. We started this to track the quality of life in East Baton Rouge Parish. Our goal was to try to find some improvements and use it internally to guide our projects, and so that's what the purpose is. A lot of things over the 6 years have stayed the same, but some things are starting to improve, and that's very encouraging.
What are some of the things that are starting to improve?
Well, we have some good news this year. When we first started the survey, we learned that there was a lot of people in Baton Rouge fearful of crime. But in the last 2 years, we've had a decrease in the number in that fear level. One is that 63% of people now feel safe walking alone at night in their own neighborhood. That's down more than 10% over 2 years. And up 10% over 2 years. And the fear of crime, of being a victim of crime, has declined by 13% over the last 2 years. So that's good news. And I think we can attribute that to the BRAVE project that was instituted here and has decreased the murder rate in Baton Rouge pretty dramatically.
But yet still a lot of people are afraid to walk at night in their own neighborhoods.
Yeah, there's still a lot of work to do. We can see that in a lot of the indicators that are there. I mean, half the people are still worried that they'll be a victim of crime in the coming year. And another stat that we have, 23% of the people said they were a victim of crime last year. So one out of every four almost is a crime victim. That is not a good statistic.
Well, the numbers can be a bit overwhelming, but there are some numbers that are significant. I'm sure all of them are, but 65% of the residents of our area. And by the way, did this include just East Baton Rouge Parish?
Yeah, this was only East Baton Rouge Parish, and we do the entire parish. This is a sample that's representative of the parish. It's not one of likely voters. We do this because we want to gauge everybody in the community, incorporate their beliefs and opinions in how we produce a better place to live.
65% favor legalizing marijuana for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, we've got two states in the country now that have legalized marijuana. This on the ballot for two more states this year. So we were curious how Baton Rouge felt about it. Strong support for legalizing marijuana for medicinal purposes, but still 55% of the people are against legalizing it for personal use. By the way, that's up slightly from the year before. We've asked this question twice. But 64% see it's inevitable that one day it'll be legal in Louisiana to buy marijuana over the counter.
And as far as politics, 34% of the people in East Baton Rouge Parish identify themselves as moderate.
Yeah, this has started a little debate about Baton Rouge amongst a few people in town that I know. We've learned a lot over the 6 years of this project, and I was surprised early on at how open Baton Rouge was. We always, and agreeable as well across the whole parish, there was a strong belief that Baton Rouge was divided, but we found that was not true, that there are actually people in Central that agree on most things that are agreeable to folks in Shenandoah and South Baton Rouge. And so in this case, we find that 34% of the people are moderate. We're still at 39% total conservative and 20% liberal. The number of moderates has increased over the last year. The thing we've seen is that over 6 years is that people have become more and more open in this community as they learn the ideas that are coming along. You see that in the same-sex marriage question, we were below 50%, and now for the first time, 54% of the people are in support of allowing gays and lesbians to marry.
And last year it was 47%.
Correct. And there's still a breakdown. If you look at the breakdown by demographic, there's still younger people are in favor of it and older people are not. That's kind of what
you expect.
It would
seem, based on this, though, Mukul, that we're talking about gay marriage here, which would be an issue perhaps more sensitive than this fairness ordinance that the Metro Council appears ready to kill again.
Yeah, the fairness ordinance, which has huge support, the numbers have been out there, 62%. When we looked at the breakdown by demographics, age, education, even political affiliation, we found that everybody, all those groups, it was over 50% support, including Republicans at 52%.
80% would hop aboard a passenger train from Baton Rouge to New Orleans, with 19% saying they would ride it weekly and 31% riding monthly. And yet the governor declined the federal funding for this.
We have been working on this project for a number of years. We call it the Spain Train after John Spain, who's eager and has been working very hard to get this done. The goal is to get high-speed rail at 70. That's high-speed by U.S. terms at 79 miles an hour. Between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, with stops along the way in Gonzales, at the mall maybe, or the medical district, and then further down the line, a couple of more places, and finally to the airport, and then on to the Superdome's station there. It would take a little over an hour, be competitive with driving your car. It would cost about $10 to get there. People are in agreement. This is a good idea. And I think that's because there's, you know, folks who drive to New Orleans get caught in traffic a lot, and it's a don't know the certainty of how quickly they're going to get to their appointment. It's also a nice thing to have that you can just sit on a train and read a paper, and it gets you there pretty quickly.
The Spain Train.
The Spain Train.
I'm sure will be more popular than was the poo-poo choo-choo. Remember that
I
one?
I think so, yes. Which had nowhere to go.
Martha Madden, the DEQ Secretary of Louisiana, ended up on The Tonight Show talking about the poo-poo choo-choo. Maybe Mook will be on The Tonight Show talking about the Spain Train. The percentage of children under 13 living in poverty is at 29% in 2012. You have surveyed this, and 24% say they can't afford food sometime, and 27% say they can't afford health care?
Yeah, it's 29%, by the way, is a very high number. Louisiana
stayed the same since 2012.
Yeah, stayed the same from the previous year. It's a very high number compared to the rest of the country. Poverty in Baton Rouge, John Fregenes, who did our comprehensive plan, he said that we have incredible wealth in Baton Rouge and we have extreme poverty. It's kind of unusual that way. But this extreme poverty is kind of the source of a lot of our problems, including troubles in education and people getting jobs and so on. And, of course, crime.
Here's an interesting stat, and we, of course...
By the way, just quickly, the people can't afford food the previous year in healthcare. We looked at the data, and there's a lot of middle-class people in that number. It's not just poor people who, at some point...
Isn't that something? When we're talking huge numbers here, 24% said they can't afford food sometime, and 27% can't afford healthcare. And another statistic that... is one that I found particularly enlightening. Digital circulation at the Baton Rouge Library is exploding. Downloads of e-books, audiobooks, and music doubled to 323,950 last year.
Yeah, the library, by the way, we have a wonderful library, and they have gone out, and there's three different systems that they now use to allow downloading of books and music and audiobooks. And you can get almost any book available at the library by sitting at home and hitting a few buttons on your Kindle or your iPad. It's pretty remarkable. And that convenience, I think, has driven the traffic so high, and it's actually been doubling every year for the last five years.
People can see this online, can't they?
They can. We can. You can get the whole survey and statistics at braf.org, braf.org. It's on our homepage right now. And if you'd like a printed copy, we can certainly mail you one. Just email me.
At Mukul. Email address?
mverma@braf.org. M-V-E-R-M-A at braf.org.
Thank you, Mukul Verma. Thank you for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow. Until then, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.